or near enough. Sick and tired of that old man looking down on us. Come together as we think we got a plan. Save a teeny tiny traveling folk band.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Platinicle Podcast. I am your host, Hannah Nawa, joined by my always producer and occasional co-host, who seems very disappointed in the fact that I held my breath a little too long to get this intro started, Mr. Sam Fritz.
It's not that you held your breath a little too long. It's that, and I might leave this in when I edit it, it's that you kept breathing in progressively.
Was it?
It wasn't just like one, because you know when sometimes in the podcast you hear before your person starts speaking, but if you listen closely at the intro to this episode, you're going to hear, "Hi everyone." Every single second, you just took a deeper breath.
And the cartoon mouse smile, I think, really sold it to my, it's a little too late to be recording intros face, if you will. We're recording intros a little bit later than we normally do. We normally record these, like, first thing in the morning.
First thing in the morning or, like, after lunch.
Yeah, it's a little bit later than our usual schedule because yesterday was quite the busy day. This is the third and final episode of our back-to-back interviews that we did yesterday with Shawn Rice, Nick Andrew Staver, and then Sean Cox.
But in this case, yesterday is 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, in this case, yesterday is 3 weeks ago because pre-recording is a wonderful thing. But this is the final interview out of those three consecutive ones that we recorded in one day.
And it is our first phone interview.
It is our first phone interview. So I have no idea what to expect out of this because I've never done a phone interview before. You obviously have as a professional journalist slash radio host slash assortment of...
Thank you for calling me professional.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot it straight with our listeners, you know.
Shoot it straight, Sammy.
I think that... phone interviews can sometimes be tedious for the listener of a podcast. I know that a majority of podcast listeners really prefer to have them done in person. Mm-hmm. And trust us, guys, we prefer it too. That's why it took us all the way until episode 13 to get our first phone interview. But at the same time, I think we get the chance to tell these artists stories. We get the chance to give them a platform to speak out. And so, you know, sometimes we just have to take what's available to us. And this time it happened to be a phone interview.
Right. And let us know how you guys feel about the phone interviews. We do have a couple that are going to be coming up here simply because the artists are just so far away that it's not feasible for us to go out and reach them.
Tell you what, if you don't like the phone interview, go to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, and leave a comment saying you didn't like the phone interview. If you did like the phone interview, go to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, and leave a comment saying you like the phone interview. We will read your comments no matter what, as long as they are 5 stars.
Anything less than 5 stars, we just don't count it, because we're 5 stars, you're 5 stars, everybody's 5 stars in this scenario.
While we're doing a little bit of pre-episode banter, to be honest, I only ask for 5 stars because that's what every other podcast does.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so of course we strive to
Nobody says rate us honestly according to your opinion. They just say give us 5 stars.
Well, no, I mean, like, I think everybody strives to do their best, put their best foot forward, do their mm-hmm. best work, and of course mm-hmm. we're no different. Mm-hmm. But, like, my heart's not broken at a 3 or a 4-star review, but nobody ever says, like, hey, you know, give us 3 to 5, you know, if you think we're somewhere in that range. Everybody just wants 5, but I guess it's the iTunes algorithm. We're still pretty new at the game that we don't mm-hmm. have it all figured out. Like, I guess maybe it's one of those things where when you get an employee performance review, if you don't get perfect, then your boss is like, well, it was terrible. A 9 out of 10 means that you could have done better. Like, hey, man, 4 out of 5 stars is pretty good. That means we're putting on a nice quality show, in my mind.
It means we're doing something, right?
In my opinion, but iTunes, apparently, it's got to be 5 out of 5 or you ain't worth it. I don't know.
Take it to the heads of Apple.
I will. You know what? I'm going to march on Wall Street.
Apple, who's in control of iTunes, right?
Yes, Apple is in control of iTunes, as in the people who founded and started it, yes.
Just I'm just fact checking, guys. You can never, it never hurts to fact check.
Correct.
but this episode we recorded in studio. We did a phone interview. I have no idea what to expect out of this. Like I said, we do have some upcoming phone interviews that we're scheduling just because we are reaching out to artists of a much wider scale and that live much farther away that aren't going to be passing through the area or that, you know, we're not going to go see. We've been very lucky that we've been able to be flexible and travel and go see some of our artists in Cleveland and in Connecticut and Charlottesville. And but that's not always going to be the case. So it's good to have backups like this. And we interviewed Sean from Three Strands, and pretty much we had just a nice conversation talking to him about the difference between being in a band versus working as a solo artist. He went from being in a band for, I think, 5 years to starting this new solo project just recently. And it's kind of been a whirlwind of change, as it normally is when you leave any project and start something new. And it was really nice to hear about the differences of, I think a lot of people in bands have side projects or have solo projects, but it's never something that we've discussed before. It's never something that we've dived into.
I think that it's an interesting story, especially because we're getting it from the perspective of, you know, normally the story is the band hits it big, like worldwide famous, mm-hmm. and then the person with the ego leaves and starts their own project. And this is not the same story. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a guy was in a band, but he just wanted to feel the liberty of going out and doing it on his own, mm-hmm. you know,
and make a different kind of music.
Exactly,
you know,
yeah.
He's making a different kind of music than what he did as a band. And it was a really interesting story. And hopefully you guys, if you are in a band, if you want to start a solo project, if you're thinking about striking out on your own, maybe this could be that little bit of motivation of you can do it and you can start something new and continue with it and have it become successful.
Yeah, I fully agree with the statement that you just made.
Would you say that you concur?
I concur. If we're going off of last episode, yes.
Concur seems to be the magic word that we say, and that's typically when we start the episode.
If you guys concur, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star
nope,
review.
That's it. Guys, here's our interview. Hope you enjoy.
Just a quick check. Three Strands is your solo project, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I know that you were previously involved with a band for quite a while. What sort of created the desire to start your own solo project after having been in a band for so long?
Yeah, I think it was, so the band I was in for, it was just about 5 years. It was called the Band of Rivals, and we were based mostly in and around Philly. So I think a lot of like going in college and kind of out of college, there's just a lot of growing I did as a songwriter with those musicians. So I think as we played more and more together, we started to compromise a lot of things just to like make it fun for everybody. And I think that's just slowly how a lot of the songs that ended up becoming Three Strand songs, you know, came about. It was like I noticed they were a little bit more delicate or a little bit more soulful, and I would just kind of hang on to them. And as we moved along, and you know, within the last year that we were a band, everybody had some different life directions and different chapters they wanted to start. So it's kind of a perfect time for me to kind of break out and figure out how to do something on my own.
Do you sort of prefer the experience of working by yourself and being the person that's solely in control of your music, or do you still enjoy the collaboration with other artists?
I do really like kind of from the initial ideas until I'd say like basically the complete song, like the bones are there. I love to do that by myself just to get it all kind of out and get all, you know, do the editing and stuff like that. But yeah, I still do love to get other people's, you know, input as much as I can. So I do play solo a lot now, but when I can, it's great to have some other musicians involved.
Do you ever, you know, now that you are doing focusing solely on your solo project, do you ever have, you know, any other musicians maybe come in and co-write with you, or, you know, write for different instruments for this project? Do you ever have sort of those like little guest appearances from other musicians?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, a great example is a song I'm recording next week. I had two really good friends out in Seattle kind of remotely record drums and bass for it. So I just sent them the idea and then kind of got some feedback from them about like how it felt. And then they were able to just kind of put their spin on it. So yeah, it's great to have like people you really trust that can just take it a lot further than you think it could go.
Can I ask you a little bit about where the name Three Strands came from?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it comes from, there's a saying that goes, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. And I kind of looked at that, like using that moniker we're talking about right now, like collaborating. I just think that's such a essential part of like why I play music and why I think music can affect people is, you know, the community and the, how everybody can make something together. So that's kind of how that like fell into place. And, you know, even though it's something I do a lot by myself, it's, I felt like I wanted to take on some kind of project name to make it more open than just some, you know, strictly solo project.
And then you released Letters of the Light. Is that correct?
Yeah, Letters to the Light.
Yes. And that was released in 2017. What was the process, you know, recording for that? Did you record yourself or, you know, did you use a studio? How did the recording process for that start?
I did. I went to a studio in Lancaster. They're no longer here because they moved, set up somewhere else. But basically, like, I came in and we did a couple weekends of just, like, going through about 15 songs I had had. And we really just kind of, like, you know, tested them and saw, like, what songs seem like they really are strong. So we kind of whittled that down to six, and that was really what ended up being the EP. So it was cool. Like, same thing. It was great to work with people that could like give me honest feedback, and they were able to, you know, we could put it to more of a process than me just picking, you know, five or six random songs myself. So yeah, it came together really quick. You know, it was probably those two weekends, and then we tracked all in like, I guess, 3 days.
Do you think as you continue to record more music that you're going to continue sort of that path of working with a studio? Is that something that you enjoy, something that you would recommend for other artists?
I do. And I think the only great thing now is that, you know, there's so many ways to do a lot of it yourself. So the only reason I love going into a studio is I feel like, if you're doing it at home in your home studio or something like that, it can be a little easier to maybe take too much time or get, at least for me, I can get really off track. And I feel like when the clock's ticking in a studio, it just can help you really focus and get things done faster, and more, you know, proficiently.
How different was it for you, or like, how was the feel different for you recording a solo project versus recording with a band or sort of making those decisions with a band? Did the people who you were, your producers and your technicians, were they sort of able to be vocal in the way that maybe a bandmate would be of, well, I think that we should maybe tweak this a little bit, or I think that, you know, this would sound good this way?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think what was nice was they were able to do a lot of that. But what happened in my previous, like pretty much every other band I was in that got to the point where we recorded in the past, there was just a lot of like, there's a lot of compromises we would be making just for the sake of like, you know, everybody being as happy as they could be. But what I really loved about this process was working with the guys I did, we were able to just all make decisions on like what's best for each individual song. So I really loved how for them, they knew like really well who I was influenced by and what I was trying to go for sound like sonically. So it really helped all of us make decisions on, you know, not just putting things in songs for the sake of having a banjo part or having a harmonica. Like, we did things much more intentionally. So that made me feel so much more comfortable the whole time.
I was reading up an article on you, and I read that Ashfield Soul was directly influenced by Thoreau's Walden, and that you mentioned that a lot of your writing is inspired by nature. Would you say that, you know, most of your songs are directly influenced by something, or is it sort of a culmination of life experiences or adventures or things that you're seeing, if that makes any sense?
Yeah. What's interesting that I've seen is, as I've started to play more this year with this project, I've noticed that a lot of my newer songs are getting much more inspired by personal, situations or things I've gone through. And I think a lot of what I used to do is I would take a lot of literature or a lot of just like examples to use, and I kind of hide behind that in the song. And just, you know, if someone would ask, you know, just say, oh, it's about this book or it's about, you know, this poem. But I think as I've gotten a lot more confident as a songwriter, I've been able to be a little bit more straightforward and honest with, you know, what I write about. And what's been great is I've seen those songs have really started to reach a little further and, you know, connect with more people, because I think I'm being much more direct.
Are there certain songs in particular that you think are a good insight into your life, or, you know, an insight into your personal thoughts and feelings?
Oh, absolutely. There's a song that I put out in February called Song on Song, which is a very, like, came directly out of something that I had noticed recently. So what it came from was I was kind of going through like a normal morning of scrolling through some of the headlines on my phone. And I can't remember particularly when it was, but it was one of the articles that was, you know, some type of riot or shooting, something terrible that, you know, kind of stops you. And I read it for a few minutes and, you know, thought, oh, that's terrible, you know, and feeling bad about it. And then I kind of just put my phone away and went about with my day. So I was kind of struck by that, you know, how we're all able to turn that on and off so easily and kind of keep ourselves boxed away from, you know, these bad things that are happening in the world and not have any kind of, you know, not having anything we feel like we can do. So that song just kind of came out a couple of days later, all in, you know, in 10 minutes. So it was one of those, I feel like the special songs are the ones that really just come out fast and complete.
Is that difficult at all for you? Because I feel like artists in general have this really incredible and unique ability to be able to open up their hearts and their minds and speak about things that are, you know, for lack of a better term, devastating. Things that I guess weigh heavy on the heart and on the soul. Is that difficult for you? Do you find that songwriting process for things like that therapeutic at all? Is that your way of sort of processing these sort of things that are going on?
Yeah, I do. Definitely. I feel like it's always been a very, as you said, it's like a very therapeutic thing, and it's a way for me to, like, I guess it's a way for me to turn things or experiences that might be negative into something that can be really positive when I turn it around. So like, if I can make a tragic thing in my own life or someone I know, you know, an experience they've had, if I can like channel that into a great song that people enjoy listening to, I feel like that's like a really great result. And it's kind of the way I try and structure, I guess, you know, what I do is, you know, that's the goal really.
Are you doing music full time?
Like almost. So I have two other kind of part-time jobs right now that are keeping everything steady. And just really trying to work towards that goal of full time.
You've been touring a little bit. Did you play in Lakewood, Ohio recently?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I was out there.
Did you play at the library?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that was it.
Yep. They have a lot of really great shows out there. I do a lot of work out of Cleveland, so I'm very familiar with the Lakewood area.
Gotcha.
And so I saw that on your touring list when we first started talking, and I got really excited because, you know, I have a deep, deep love of Cleveland.
Oh, no, it's awesome. And I would love to, like, I really want to get out to Cleveland a little bit more.
It has a pretty good growing music scene. That whole area of, you know, Akron, Canton, Cleveland right. has a pretty growing music scene. So I definitely recommend it, especially being so nearby. It's, you know, 6-7 hours.
Oh, exactly.
It's totally a great area to tour. If you ever need any recommendations, if you go back out that way, just, you know, let me know.
Sure.
But, you know, you started touring as this new project. How has the response been? Were you sort of anxious at all going out and playing these new songs?
Yeah, I definitely. So what's funny is, I was in that previous band for all that time, and all the time we played together, we did play pretty frequently, but the furthest we ever got was pretty much New York City. So we would only do New York, maybe Baltimore, and then, like, we would just hammer Philadelphia. You know, that was like, I think we played it way too much, honestly. But so we were just kind of that local, you know, we would play, you know, all the spots around the city. So it was pretty scary for me going out with Three Strands. Like, it was probably about 3 or 4 months in was when I started to venture to just even DC. Like, that was, like, at first, like, a big step for me, you know, going to DC. And I think where it really started to become, like, something that I got so excited about and felt like I could see myself doing was back in March. I did a week where I just kind of went Virginia and then down through Asheville and then over through Tennessee and ended up in Nashville and then came back up. And it was really validating to be in all these different cities I've never been and play for people, you know, they have no idea who I am, and actually to get a response. Like, that was just so reaffirming for, you know, me believing in the songs and believing in just doing it as a solo project. Like, it was awesome.
It's sort of that validation of, like, oh, yeah, no, I can actually do this. Like,
I'm exactly.
It's not just me and my close friends that think this is okay. It's other people outside of my yeah. my close little circle. Yeah, I totally understand that. Have the people who, you know, maybe followed your band, have you had any experiences with them coming out and seeing shows and kind of seeing this new project at all?
Definitely.
A, you know, oh, I used to, you know, follow you, and now I'm here to see what you've got now.
Yeah, and I think what's been, it's just another great thing that's helped me is being able to talk to people that can compare the two things. And a lot of the comments I've been getting are people saying, like, oh, you know, you're definitely, you seem more at home in what you're doing, or, you know, comments like that where they're saying, like, you know, you're much more confident, or you're much more, you know, it seems like authentic. And I think that's just because, like, it has nothing to do, like, I mean, no disrespect to people I play with. Like, they were so much fun to play with, but definitely myself feel like, you know, I'm really singing with my own voice now, and I'm writing the kinds of songs I've always wanted to.
I may have stalked your Twitter a little bit, just because, you know, Matt was kind of the bridge for this interview. If you, to our listeners, we did an interview with Matt Wheeler in Lancaster as one of our first couple of episodes, right?
Yeah, Matt Wheeler was episode number 4.
Yeah, very, very early on. And he was very helpful in giving us a long list of people that we could reach out to, and you were amongst them. But I saw that you played a show in a So Far show in DC back in July, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we talked sort of at length with Matt about the experience of playing with So Far. What was your experience with So Far Sounds. Is that something that you enjoy doing? Can you sort of, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about that process and that show in particular?
Oh, absolutely. As you guys know, and a lot of people know, Matt Wheeler's like the guru of everything East Coast music. So he's been such a good friend and ally for like helping me, like even when I was starting this stuff last spring, just giving me a couple like first steps I could take. And one of the first things he had talked about heavily was So Far. And so, yeah, the one I played last month, that was my fifth So Far I've done so far.
Oh, wow.
So far. that's my fifth, and then I have two more coming up. So it's been amazing to just see kind of echoing, like I had a chance to listen to the episode you guys did. So I don't want to like totally repeat everything Matt said, but I totally agree. Like, it's such a rare thing, especially for people in kind of our general genre, to have, you know, such a captive audience, such an incredible, like just the way they organize and how they book and the details, like everything is just top notch. And I think what's so cool for me is it's almost like being an opener where, like, you know, you're going to open for an artist where people are expecting nothing out of you because they don't know you. But what's cool about it is everybody's in the position that plays that night. Like, they don't know anybody who's playing, so you're all kind of on a level playing field, and you're able to just bring the strongest stuff you got for 20 minutes. So, like, oh, it was so crucial and so many things for me, you know, testing new songs and things like that. It's been invaluable.
You can go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask to piggyback off that. I noticed that you called Matt the guru of everything East Coast music. in your brief experience with So Far, or just your experience as an artist in general, have you found a lot of, you know, artists, other people in general who don't mind mentoring or reaching out and trying to help, you know, guide you along the path, you know, other Matt Wheelers, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. And I've really tried to. What's been so cool is I've seen how it's been able to help me with people I've met just in different places. You know, I've met a couple of people in Nashville and a couple of people in Boston and New York. And the fact that they've been so open with me and able to help, like now that I'm seeing people come to me and ask for those things, like I'm just really adamant about like trying to pass that to them. Like I just really love how, and I think So Far does have a lot to do with, because of how they structure their shows, really trying to get the artists to have some kind of, you know, communal time together. And yeah, I think everybody I've played with, I've been able to have, you know, either set up stuff for in the future to play again together or help each other find venues in different cities. So it creates a really cool network. Sure.
One of the things that I've loved about doing this podcast and interviewing people is everybody seems so genuinely set on helping out other musicians that are in either similar positions or just starting out.
Right.
And like I'm a big believer in, I don't believe in Hollywood friends. Like I believe in just truly genuinely setting out to help other people and give advice. And that's the whole reason why we created this podcast, was we wanted sort of almost a manual or a directory of all these experiences of, well, this is how I did it and this is how I'm being successful, and how I've sort of become my own person and able to tour and make money and all this stuff that when you first start out as an independent artist is so overwhelming. You know, we're constantly flooded by, I can even, you know, just even if you just Google like how do I book shows, you're flooded with so much information, but none of it seems to be personal, or none of it seems to be that advice of, you know, you can call up a Matt Wheeler and be like, hey man, like I just got this really weird booking email, is this normal, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, Matt has been an awesome contact for us. Just he knows everybody and he's been so helpful with sort of helping us get this podcast off the ground. What kind of shows have you been playing as you've been playing these shows with this new project, are you playing a lot of house shows? Are you playing, you know, restaurants and bars? What is the kind of circuit that you're performing right now?
It's been a great mix, honestly. I mean, there's definitely been some really colorful shows that it's just the whole conversation. But but overall, it's been, you know, there's definitely been a lot of house shows in there, or kind of that format, you know. I've been lucky enough to play some places that kind of do it in that style, but it's not necessarily someone's home. So there's been that, and definitely like the brewery, you know, circuit here and there, and some coffee shops and some churches and things like that. And something that's been great for me is like that a lot of my other friends who do more of the folk Americana thing, a lot of them will do a lot of delicate music, and they'll have like an hour set of more quiet stuff. So for them, it sometimes can be tough to get into some of the brewery sets and stuff. But luckily for me, like I love a lot of old soul and rock and stuff. So since I can mix that in, I think it helps me book some more diverse types of venues and still be able to, you know, have a good result.
And you've been, haven't you been stripping back some of the songs from that you played in your band? Some of those songs you've been sort of redoing as your own personal twist.
Yes. Yeah. No.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's been so cool to like dissect, you know, something that used to have, you know, drums, bass, a fiddle part, like all these different layers that I'm like, how's the song going to stand up, you know, just with me. So yeah, I've luckily had a wealth of, you know, pretty deep catalog of songs to pick from.
I think that's really interesting because when I think about artists, for example, doing covers and stripping them back, you kind of get to see this deeper emotional level to these songs that maybe when you're just hearing it on the radio, it's a bop. And then,
right.
You know, you listen to somebody performing it in this delicate personal manner, and it has a little bit more meaning than you would have thought it had. And I imagine that's probably interesting for you going back and looking at these previous songs that you used to play. Are you sort of finding like a different meaning or a deeper meaning to them?
Absolutely. Like there's been so many that have just been from playing them again in this format, I've been able to kind of rework like what I even think the song's about. And then it just helps me sing it totally different. So that's happened with quite a few songs of my own. And then, yeah, like you were saying with covers, it's like one of my favorite things to do. I always call it like bastardizing the song. So like lately I've been doing a version of Redbone on banjo. Ooh. So when people hear it, it's Redbone, and it's like I try and maintain the groove, but it's always like funny in an entertaining way because it's like the banjo part is playing the, you know, so that's always fun to do with certain songs. So you can show people like no matter how played, a good song is a good song. And you know, like if somebody does it well, it still holds up.
You mentioned some colorful experiences for shows that you've been playing. Let me just say, we love a good rant. We love a good ramble on this podcast. So if you have any particular tales as far as, you know, any sort of strange experiences that you've had while touring or playing shows, hit them. Hit us with them. That is exactly what we want to hear. We want all the awesome. All the juicy gossip.
Yeah, there's one that, like, I feel like once every couple months I kind of have that standout show that becomes the new, like, oh, that was definitely the worst show I've ever played. So I won't get specific about the name, but mm-hmm. there was a particular venue in Tennessee that I played. It was one of those things where, like, when you would look on the Facebook page and you'd look at their calendar and stuff, it just looked like any other venue. Like, there was nothing that would have given you an impression that it was any different. So I got there maybe like an hour before I was supposed to play, and I had a 2-hour slot. So I think I started at like 10. So we walked in the front door, and like once you walked in through the inner door, I realized it was like full of smoke. So it was like a total dive. Like everybody was smoking. And then the stage was like tucked back in this really shadowy corner. So like already I was like, oh, this is going to be really rough. Like just to be able to sing through this. So, you know, I got kind of set up and was waiting on the sound guy, and, you know, he got me set up, and it was typical, like real beat old sound system. So I just already like getting on the stage, I already had that kind of feeling of like, I don't even know, like, you know, there's 10 people in here, but I might just be more annoying to them just looking at them. So it was basically like a 45 minute set of like no one even realizing there was like noise happening. So I was just trying everything I could to, you know, do something entertaining. So I got through that and got down, and then, you know, went back up after a break, and I finally got to the end of, you know, all the covers I could throw in. And I really didn't want to do this song, and this particular song I love, but I was trying to save it because it just felt so wrong to do. And it was Tennessee Whiskey. So finally I was like, I have to fill the time. Like I have to play it. And the second I started that first line, everybody in the room like turned, was engaged. Two people like got up and danced. So it was like all of a sudden I played like their national anthem. And then it was like back to like, okay, like screw you, stop playing. So it was just the weirdest experience to have like an hour and a half of, you know, having no engagement with anyone. And then for a brief like 3 minute period, having the room like with me. It was just bizarre.
That seems like either a music video or a scene out of a movie. Like I'm pretty sure that is everyone's nightmare.
Exactly.
It's that, like, that's not so. Forget getting on stage dream. With no pants on. It's really just having this one super bizarre moment of, oh, you hate me. Oh, you like me. Oh, no. You hate me.
Just
again.
Kidding.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to take
they're
my
like
back.
Chris Stapleton.
I mean, are they wrong? Everybody loves Chris Stapleton.
No, exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, I don't want to talk crap on him at all. Like, I love his tunes, but it's just funny that that happened to land.
You, Sam, you looked like you had something to say whenever, no, it looked like Sam was very interested in the, every few months you have that experience of my worst show experience.
Right.
That just sort of keeps coming up.
I was just interested in the story behind it. I guess if we wanted to do a follow-up, the question could go the very same way of, have you had an experience of a show that for no real particular reason just stood out as being great, you know?
Right.
Or I guess there would be a particular reason, but you weren't expecting it, I guess is the better way to phrase that question.
Yeah, there's been a lot of what I've really tried to do more with this project is like just manage my expectations better with just every show. And like I feel like sometimes in the past, like I would get so hyped about playing a certain room or, you know, or playing with like something about the show would make me like, this is going to be the greatest show. And then it would always let me down in some way because I think I would just make some kind of unrealistic thing. So there's been a lot of shows that I've walked into thinking like, oh, this will be fun. You know, it'll be fun to play, but not expecting anything. And they've been incredible. Actually the most recent one I had was when I was out in Ohio, we actually did play a show in Newark. At, I don't know if you guys have heard of 31 West. It's like a venue there. So we played in the Bootlegger Bar, which is just that next door, the smaller room. And I just thought like it was the same thing as that terrible show I was telling you guys about. Like it was the same thing, like 2 hours. It was paid well, so I was happy about that. But I just thought like these people will be having a good time and we'll just play some fun stuff to fill the time. And it ended up being like probably like the second song I sang, everybody at the bar like turned their stools all the way around, and then everybody that came in like would pull their table, like would take the front tables. So it ended up being like a crowd of, I'm not even sure how many people, but like they stayed with the set the whole time. And like I ended up only taking a couple minute break because they were just really into it, and I didn't want to stop playing. I just wanted to keep going. So that was awesome because it was so unexpected. Like to think, I think a lot of bar shows I've played have usually been more the background music type deal. So it was cool to have a crowd of people that came out and they, you know, liked what I was doing.
All right. Well, we're at about our 30-minute mark. So I'm going to ask you a couple just last few questions, and then we'll wrap it up. Cool. But I guess I mainly want to start with, well, we have this question that I always forget to ask our interviews, but is actually the question that I want to ask every single person that I meet, which is, what have you been listening to lately? What would you say are, you know, if you could tell our listeners, like, go out, check out this artist, check out this band, who are you kind of jiving with? Who are you supporting or rooting for right now?
Yeah, there's been a lot of really great stuff lately, like kind of brand new stuff that people have been showing me. There's a band out of Austin called Vody, who's kind of, I feel like they're just on the cusp of really breaking out pretty big. And they just put out a debut album, and just an incredible, like, they pull from so many old sounds, so many old, like, classic 70s tones and stuff. And they're just, like, the whole album is just groovy. So they're a big one. And then I've been kind of on repeat. The new Leon Bridges album is just unbelievable. Like, it's just, I love his, like, old school soul stuff, because that's definitely stuff I love too. But when he came out with this, like, kind of, it's like an evolution really of his sound, like, it just blew me away. So there are two that are sticking out to me off the top of my head, at least.
This is kind of a, when you are influenced by other artists, you know, you hear somebody's sound and you think, oh, this is something that I want to put a little bit of into my music. Are those typically older artists, or are they more current artists?
Yeah, it's been a nice mix. I think, like, when I was growing up and when I started writing, I had, like, all of it was pretty much like my dad's record collection was, like, what was on my iPod. So when I was, like, 15 through 20 or so, like, all it was like, I wanted to be, like, you know, the Allman Brothers or, like, Led Zeppelin or, like, something like that. And then I started to find, like, a bunch of people that they're current artists, but I feel like they're doing what I used to do with, like, classic folk artists. So, like, they're new and they're different for now, but you can totally tell that they're pulling from a lot of, like, old school classic artists in their genre. So I find myself, like, being attracted to that kind of artist, I guess.
Okay, awesome. As far as where can people find you? This episode is going to be released on, let me check, August 15th. So if you have any particular, like, event, right?
August 11th.
August 11th is a Saturday.
I was looking in July. No, you're August correct. August 15th.
It's going to be released August 15th. So if you have any shows or events after that, but otherwise, you know, where can people find you online, any social media, website, that sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, Instagram's definitely, that's my favorite one. And Facebook is just Three Strands Music. And if they want to go to my website too, it's threestrandsmusic.com. And yeah, they can, it's pretty easy through those to find where to listen. You know, Spotify is definitely the easiest way to find all the music. And that's pretty much all I'm using now. I mean, they're always great. I mean, Instagram's like my favorite just because you can, there's a lot of ways to connect on different levels with people. So definitely try and use that one the most.
All right. Awesome.
All right, guys, that does it for this interview. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to tune in again next week. We post every single Wednesday. We are available on iTunes, Podomatic, and Google Play Podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at The Flat Nickel Podcast. Make sure to drop us a like, a favorite, a subscribe, a five-star review wherever you're listening, and we will be sure to get another episode out to you guys next week.